TheDigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, show 148, Thursday, 13th of March, 2008. Centre show with tech.co.uk. I'm Ian Dixon. This week on the show, Microsoft's Todd Borah joins me to talk about Media Centre extenders. Todd is a product manager from the extender team at Microsoft, and we'll be talking about the new generation of Media Centre extenders and the different types of devices available and how we're going to connect them, that kind of thing. I've got email, news items, and an update on Media Centre Health Monitor, and an update on the membership on thedigitallifestyle.com. But first, to some emails. This one is from Brian. Says, "Hi Ian, in show 145 you read out an email with a question and asked for contributions regarding making DVDs available on a Media Centre from a central hard disk. I put together some answers here that I thought would help your listener," and he's given me a link for that on his website, and that was from Brian. Thanks for your email, Brian. I've had a look at the tips. They're really good, actually. So I've put a link for them in the show notes and on Brian's website. And there's some useful tips there, because it's always a problem, isn't it, when you've got a new media center user, how do you get started streaming DVD content around the home? So have a look at that and link for that in the show notes. And thanks to Brian for sending that in. And Brian gets a copy of Big Screen Photos too for sending and being emailer of the week. And each week I pick out an emailer to give away a copy of some software, and this week it's Big Screen Photos 2, and also going to be giving away Big Screen Weather 2. So if you email in and help someone or have a good email, you could be emailer of the week. And you can also get a 20% off Big Screen products like Big Screen Weather and Big Screen Photos 2 by using the checkout code DigitalDeal from bigscreenglobal.com, and there's trial versions available, so you can have a play with it, see if you like it before you decide to buy it. And now to another email. This is from Chris. "Hi Ian. First I'm going to say that your site and videos are excellent and very useful. I'm sure you hear that a lot, but it's always good to hear. I'm just setting up Vista Media Centre PC. Essentially I had some spare parts such as a case and a motherboard, processor, etc. Enough to make a PC. So I decided to start my first Media Centre project. I've been trawling through the net but cannot find a decent answer to what to do. We have Sky Plus currently and I want to be able to control it from Media Centre, such as change channels within Media Centre. I noticed one of your videos, the links this one, you had some recorded TV. Is this from Sky, Freeview or normal telly? I really hope you can point me in the right direction. Regards, Chris." Thanks for your email, Chris. And I've actually emailed back and forth with Chris a few times during the last week. And I was using Freeview on my system, which is a DVB-T over the air. And I told Chris, and Chris has actually decided to go down the Freeview route. So he's bought a dual DVB-T tuner card for his PC, so he'll be able to receive two Freeview signals, and Freeview is the digital over-air TV signal we get here in the UK. And so Chris is going to be able to record Media Centre directly, and it looks like he's going to be ditching his Sky. So I think he's going to have a good solution, actually, and I hope that he gets that all up and running, and he can start investigating some of the other features that Media Centre has to offer. And Chris also said he'd like to see some more videos, and so he'd like to see more unboxing videos and more product review videos. So I'm going to try and do some more of those. So it's finding the time is hard work. The videos always seem to take so much more time than the audio does, but I'm definitely going to try and do those. And if you've got something that you'd like to see me looking at on the show or talk about on the show, send an email. Ian at thedigitallifestyle.com. And it's coming up to show 148 now, and they're going to be talking to Microsoft's Charlie Owen, who was on the show back in the early days, show number 4. And I thought what we could do, as well as the interview, I'd like to read out some emails. So if you've got something you want to say about how Media Centre has changed the way you use your media in the last 3 years since I've been doing the show — it's actually 3 years today as recording this that launched the show — send me an email in, send me a greeting message for show 150 or for being 3 years, or just anything you want to send in, and I'm going to read those out and show 150. And you'll be included to in the chance to get a copy of Big Screen Photos 2 or Big Screen Weather. So now to a couple of news items from around the web. One tool which I actually couldn't live without is a program called FolderShare, and I use this to synchronize folders across all my different PCs. And as I've talked about, I've got Telet PC, UM PC, and my Media Center PC. And FolderShare is an application that Microsoft bought some while ago, actually, and they make this freely available, and they've actually updated it and with improvement for Vista support and a better web client. Basically, it works by you install the FolderShare client on your PC, you pick a folder you want to share, and across multiple machines, it synchronizes them. And I use it for synchronizing Excel files and video clips and pictures and anything that I would want on any of the devices that I'm using at that time, especially if you're going to be offline. So say I was at CES and wasn't online all the time, I knew that all these files were synchronized, so as soon as I put them on back on the internet, they'd resynchronize and they'd be backed up, and it uses kind of a peer-to-peer technology. But it's also very useful for syncing media around the home. If you don't want to go off a sync off a server and a shared file, you can actually use FolderShare for it to sync files. And they can be big files because it intelligently routes them over your LAN, and it doesn't upload everything to the web and back down again. It uses peer-to-peer from machines to talk to each other. So it's a good solution for sharing media around the home, and you don't need a server to do it. So that's one route to do to share content. And there's a web client as well, so you don't actually need anything installed to be able to retrieve your content. You can just sign in with a username and password and drag files down. So I found it really useful, and like I say, it's been updated for better support for Vista, although I've had no issues running on Vista. And there's a link for that in the show notes. And talking of shared storage, Microsoft have updated the knowledge base article about the data corruption bug that we talked about a couple of weeks ago on the show. And it says the fix is being worked off with a delivery date of June 2008. I'll actually quote what it says on the post. It says the issue can now be reliably reproduced and a fix is in development. Microsoft intends to release a beta test version of the fix over the next few months, with the final version currently planned for June 2008. That date could change as testing progresses. Thorough testing of the fix is critical and will take time. And there's full details of it linked in the show notes, and it also includes what applications are affected. As of yet, I've not been affected by this problem at all. And it seems to be when you're editing files directly on the home server, and I don't do that, and I use it as a backup tool and remote access. But anyway, have a look at that link in the show notes. If you're into Twitter like I am and become addicted to it, actually, you can find me, IS Dixon, on Twitter. If you've not seen Twitter, it sounds like it wouldn't be useful, but once you get it, it's really fun. It's an application for like microblogging. You've got 140 characters you can blog, and you follow your friends or any people you want to follow on the internet, and they can follow you. You don't have to. You don't have to follow them. They don't have to follow you. And I'm using it to keep in touch with other bloggers and from other websites and things like, you know, the Windows Vista blog. They've got one on there, and you can follow that. And it's a really nice way of following people that you keep in touch with, kind of more regularly than a blog. And, you know, just one line of text, and it is very addictive once you get into it. And people can use it for just sending simple things from a text message. You can send in what you're doing, where you right the way through to posting sort of blog posts with links back to the main blog. Anyway, I've been following that and been using that for a while now, and really do like it. I've worked on my Media Center Health Monitor tool. That this is the tool that you install on your Media Center PC, and it kind of monitors the health of Media Center, things like disk space and any program recording failings and anything like that, and then reports them back to the GUI on your Media Center machine. It will also upload to the internet to a website on the digitallifestyle.com where you can check the status of your system. It will do emails, and now I've added Twitter support. And the way this works is in the tool you just put a Twitter username and password, and it sends updates by that account. And the way I've set mine up is I've created an additional account to my main one, that sends those updates through, and then I just follow that on Twitter. So, for example, my Media Center machine started and stopped recording program Top Gear as scheduled, and that's in my Twitter feed now, so I know everything's okay. And if there's an issue, like the disk space is low or something didn't record because of a tuning problem or a power problem, it'll all be there and it'll alert me. And one of the nice things about Twitter is you can set to receive text message updates from certain people. So you could subscribe to text messages, so if there's a problem with your Media Center machine, it'll send you a text message, and it's a nice way of getting updates from Media Center Health Monitor. So have a look at that if you like it. There's a link in the show note. It's in beta at the moment. It's completely free. You just sign up for an account. It emails me. I just enable your account, and it'll email you back when it's done, and you download the client. And if you've got any feedback or whatever, let me know in at thedigitallifestyle.com. And the shortcut for the download, by the way, is health.thedigitallifestyle.com. If you're a Media Center developer, I spotted a new blog this week that may be worth looking at. This blog covers topics such as understanding layouts and layout inputs and how to attach a debugger and those kind of things. It's been started by Johan van Ruth. He's a regular poster on the Media Center Sandbox, the developer site for Media Center. And I'll include a link for that in the show notes. And it looks like it's going to be a good, nice blog, so it's good to have another resource there for Media Center developers. And don't forget also, you can follow Stephen Harding. He writes a great Media Center development blog here on thedigitallifestyle.com. Now, a new product from show sponsors OneVoice, and you've probably heard and mentioned on the show before with their Media Center Communicator products, and they've got a new product out called VoiceTunes, and this is an application for controlling Windows Media Player and iTunes via the voice, and it will actually control Media Center as well. It looks a nice looking application. If you play your media through Media Player or iTunes, you can just use voice control in the way that you would with Media Center Communicator. So you can tell it to play a track and tell it to play stop and pause and all that kind of stuff. So it's a nice little application, and there's actually a free trial available from the download section on thedigitallifestyle.com. So download that, have a look, see if it's any good for you, and if it is, give it a try. I'm going to be giving away a copy of this to one of the gold members in the digitallifestyle.com forums, and I'll explain a bit more about gold members in a minute. You can also hear Adam from One Voice talking about voice tunes on eHome Upgrade. A nice little interview on there, and the link for that in the show notes. Now, I'm getting more and more into live streaming, and I've been using Ustream to do that, and the way I've got that embedded into the site now, into digitallifestyle.com. So if you go to live.digitallifestyle.com, or there's a shortcut on the toolbar on the site, you can actually go to the live feed, and I have this on at kind of random times, really, whenever I'm doing anything that I feel is worth streaming. But I'm also using it to stream some interviews. We used it to do the EdBot interview, the Media Center Show Awards, and also going to be doing that for upcoming interviews. So if you're listening to this show before Monday, it's Thursday today, on the 17th, I'll be interviewing Chris Lanier. And I think everybody knows Chris Lanier's blog. It's a great blog and a great resource for Media Center. So I'm going to be interviewing Chris at 1 p.m. PDT, which is 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. It'll be on Ustream, but if you go live.thedigitallifestyle.com, you'll be able to listen to the interview. You'll be able to see me doing the interview, and you'll be able to you'll be able to participate in the chat room. You need to create an account if you want to participate. If you just want to watch the video then and hear the stream, then you don't need to create an account. So join us next Monday, and help make the session more interactive. And if you've got any burning questions you want to ask Chris, we'll get them through them. So I mentioned about changes to the membership on thedigitallifestyle.com. Everything's staying free, so I don't want to scare you to think I'm going to charge for anything. What I want to do is really highlight the resources we've got on in the forums, and there's some great people helping out other people in there, and I wanted to show that. So I've created a gold member account status for anybody that really is helping out other people in the forums, and gold members are going to get access to discount on third-party software, special offers, and as I said before, I'm going to be giving away software, and one of those is going to be VoiceTunes. To become a gold member, you have to not be nominated by another gold member or one of the experts or one of the other members, in fact, can nominate you. So if you're on the forums, you get helped out, you can nominate somebody by sending me an email or highlighting it to one of the other experts. And then you'll get a little gold member badge on your forum posts, and there's a gold member only forum for you to go in there and chat with. You'll also see another badge that I've created, which is for the experts, site experts, and you see Microsoft Steve Lacy and Richard Miller and other people posting, helping other people out, and they've got the expert posts on there. So get onto the forums and help people out and become a gold member. Or just have a look, take a look. There's a great set of resources on there. So now, time for a break, and I'll be back to Todd Borer.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MC Each Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE speech tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Todd, welcome back to the Media Center Show.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you for having me.
And It's been a while since we had you on the show, and we're going to be talking extenders today, Media Center extenders, and I've been playing around with these quite a bit recently. So just before we dive into that, just for anybody that's not heard you on the show, I think probably this is your third time on the show, something like that. So just in case anybody's not heard you, just give us a quick background on your role and sort of what you cover at Microsoft.
Certainly. I'm a lead program manager in the Media Center extender team, and among other things, I'm working on the various upcoming releases of Media Center extender technology. I work specifically with Samsung on their upcoming extender device. And I have a few other things that I work on that, unfortunately, I can't talk about today.
Now, they're always the good stuff that we want to know, but I suppose we'll have to wait for the official announcements on those.
Exactly. I think we have some material for our fourth call.
Right. So I mean, it must have been a busy time because we had the Xbox 360 extender, and then things went quiet, and then we sort of had the release of the next generation of extenders. So let's just step back, and just in case anybody doesn't know what exactly we're talking about, what is a Media Center extender?
A Media Center extender is a network-connected consumer electronics device that extends the Media Center experience to any room in your house with a television or a display surface. So the general idea is that you can have a Media Center PC that is located in your office or your bedroom or your den or wherever you have your PC, and then you can have up to 5 devices connected at one time. You can have more than 5 devices that are arranged throughout your house connected to various display surfaces that allow you to get access to that same Media Center experience. So being able to look at your live and recorded TV content, being able to view your home videos or look at your pictures or listen to your music and have access to that content wherever it is you are in your house, not be constrained to whatever location your PC is in.
From a personal point of view, and I know that other enthusiasts, it's always kind of the dream with Media Center is to have everything centrally located and then distribute the content around the home. I suppose, so these devices are the things that we want to get the content into the other rooms.
Exactly. One of the great things about Media Center extender technology is the loud investment into the PC that has large storage capacity, has a fast processor, and take advantage of that in a location where you can use all the other functionality that's on the PC in addition to Media Center. And then by having the lower cost, quieter, smaller devices that are Media Center extenders throughout your house, you can then take advantage of that content and that experience without needing to put another PC in other rooms of your house or putting a PC necessarily next to your TV if you don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? People don't always want PCs where they would have the Media Center experience.
You're right. I do have a PC next to my TV at home, and it happens to be a PC that was designed for that purpose, where it's a living room form factor PC. It's a standard 19-inch wide entertainment-type form factor that is shiny on the front, looks like it fits into my rack. Not everyone wants that. Some people don't want to dedicate a PC and have the maintenance of that next to their TV, and rather have it in a different room in their house. So you have different options for different users with different interests. Mm.
So let's step back then and talk about the first generation of extenders, because we're on sort of the second generation extenders. So what were the first devices about?
The first devices were really about demonstrating this concept that the digital media adapter market, the DMA market, is relatively young. If you remember back to the way olden days, which really weren't that long ago, there were devices like the Turtle Beach Audiotron, which were a music-only device that allowed you to get access to your music content from another room in the house. And the notion of streaming video and television content really didn't come into play until more recently, first with video and then with Media Center Extender with television content, where this was something that was very new. And we wanted to get out there and show that this could be done, and it could be done over wireless. And the first generation devices were great. People really loved them. But they did have some noticeable limitations, that we were dealing with older generation, now at this point in time, embedded CPUs that didn't have quite the horsepower and decode capabilities that current generation embedded CPUs have. So we had support for standard definition video only. We didn't have support for high definition video. We had support for wireless ANG, which at the time were cutting-edge wireless technologies, but now we have N support. So there's been quite an evolution of the technology landscape that enables these types of devices that allows us to give you a much more powerful experience now than we were able to do back with the original generation of extender technology.
Yeah, I suppose that, like you said, it's as well as the extender technology changes, but the pieces that you need to get all this to work together, like networking and video and codecs and things like that, have all come on immensely since the version 1 extenders were launched.
Right, we've had a lot of great developments in this overall landscape, where now with wireless N technology, we have much more throughput and distance and reliability available. We have more wireless routers out there that are now what we call capable of supporting high-definition media. That it used to be that there were router manufacturers that if they had a router that took a second or two to do a station scan, it just dropped all data during that second or two, it really wasn't an issue. But for us, that's an issue, because if you drop out video for a second or two, you're going to glitch, and that's something that people don't really want to have happen. So we've seen great progress in the industry in terms of a focus on being able to support these types of media scenarios and have higher bandwidth, better range, routers that really support that. And then also, in the device area, having the decoders and the CPUs that can handle things like high-definition media playback and doing high-definition media over wireless, and doing that in addition to doing protected media playback, so you can have access to, in the United States, for example, your digital cable content that includes premium things like HBO.
And I suppose, as well as the technology advances, there's also been kind of a mindset of changes that people now, whereas, say, 5 years ago, nobody expected really to have the TV hooked up to the internet and have all this content available, whether it be HD content, cable card, or things like internet TV service, that you'd have these on the PC going down to the TV, and now people kind of accept that, you know, that's something that they want, and more people are going down that route.
Right. There's been this long-standing dream around delivering media content via IP, whether it's IPTV or TV streamed over the internet. And it's something that's really only started to gain momentum more recently. And one thing you can look at as an example of some of the neat things you can do with media content delivered over the internet is the internet TV functionality in Media Center that was rolled out with Windows Vista, where it's access from everything to concerts, to movie trailers, to viral videos, that we're now starting to see this content come in and be integrated into an experience that is suited for viewing from your couch, whether you're interacting with the Media Center extender or you're in a dorm room sitting across the room from your Media Center PC, that we have this content and interface that allows you to get access to that.
Well, I think it's almost like a stealth application, the internet TV, that at the moment people kind of look at it and maybe watch the odd video on there, but that sort of pipe that goes from the internet via your PC directly to your TV via an extender is, you know, has got so much potential that in the future I can see a place where you wouldn't necessarily, certainly direct, physical dish you're not going to need, because you've got this permanent connection there that's good enough to deliver high quality and I suppose in the future HD video.
You're right. We've come a long way, and there's still a lot more potential. I'm really excited about where we're going as a company, and also in general where the industry is going. That we're not the only ones playing in this space, and there's going to be some really interesting stuff coming online over the course of the next few years.
And I suppose, as well as being a mindset change in consumers, it's also the content providers making their content available for digital viewing, whether it be download or just streaming, but having that mindset of having the content available, and it's not just either on a transmission over the air or via cable or whatever, or a physical disc.
You're right. They're looking, for example, at the broadcast networks in the United States. The major broadcast networks now have at least some, if not a large percentage, of their TV content available for viewing online. And there are commercials embedded in it, and how that experience works varies from network to network. But it's definitely something that you can see the networks are experimenting with and seeing how does this fit their business model? What makes sense for them? What direction should they take that? And that's something that's really exciting to me, because getting that content available online starts opening the door for how do you integrate that in with other experiences that are out there? How do you make it so you can get access to all that content? And it's only going to get better.
All right, a good example is probably here in the UK is the BBC I download and streaming service, where if you sat on a PC, you can stream virtually any BBC program, but that also works on extenders. I've used the download service and then picked that up from the extender and had no problems watching content. So that's a straight internet download straight into your TV via an extender.
Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things that it's amazing when it works. You just download it and it's there. So I want to talk about the different types of extenders now, and my only experience apart from at CS was with the Linksys one, so I just wanted to talk about the range and the different kind of markets they cover. So you mentioned the Samsung one, and this is the one I've only seen briefly, so let's start with that one. So what's the Samsung extender about?
The Samsung extender is what Samsung is calling a set-back box. So it is essentially a backpack that you can attach to a Samsung TV that enables the extender experience on that TV. And before going into much more detail on that, it'd probably help to step back a little bit and just talk in general about what extender technology is and how it can be deployed in devices. That what we now offer with Media Center Extender is a platform-independent, operating system-independent porting kit, in essence, that consumer electronics manufacturers can use to add the extender feature to their device, whether that device is a standalone set-top box, a DVD player, as is the case with one of the Linksys devices, or a television, which HP is one notable example that has announced functionality for their MediaSmart television. And then also in the case of the Samsung device, you can really think of it as being a television-type form factor, where it's a little enabling box that connects to the back of the TV that gives you that extender functionality.
So the actual extender platform then is kind of a kit that the manufacturers can use to incorporate the technology into their own products.
Exactly. It's offered as something that can be compiled and run on a variety of platforms. There's a base level functionality that a hardware platform and software platform need to support in terms of being able to play MPEG-2 content and play WMV9 content and so on. But ultimately, the consumer electronics manufacturer has the flexibility to choose what specific CPU they're going to use, what they're going to use for the software on top of that. That because they have this platform-independent, OS-independent porting kit, they can enable that functionality on whatever platform they have.
Right. So I suppose so that's why the advantage of that is that like you said, they can add that to their media smart TVs like HP and Samsung can create a small device. They don't have to re-engineer and start from scratch to build the platform.
Exactly. Our goal is for it to be as easy as possible for our partners to adopt this technology because we want to get it out there.
Hmm.
This is something we're really excited about, and we want to see it show up on more devices and more people's homes and have more people use it.
And so eventually, I suppose, in the future, we could see more and more devices offering this because it could be a kit or an upgrade or whatever to their existing hardware rather than having to, you know, to have a whole new product range.
Within the limits of having the support for the necessary things, certainly, yes, this is something that can be added to existing product lines if the partner so chooses.
Mm. So the initial people to sign up to this or to announce products, I think, were Linksys, Samsung, HP, and D-Link. And we mentioned the Samsung one. So that's a slightly different form factor than the Linksys ones, which we'll come back to in a minute. But so what's the form factor of the Samsung device?
The Samsung device is about the size of a paperback book. It is a plastic unit that has very, very few ports. It has a USB port, which is used for wireless. It has a power port, and it has an HDMI port. And that's pretty much it. And this connects to the back of the television using a bracket that mounts to the existing mounting holes that are in the back of the television and connects to the TV via HDMI. And input to the Samsung device is channeled from the TV using HDMI CEC, which is the command and control functionality that HDMI offers, such that the device can be put out of sight and it's not an issue getting IR to it. So normally you might think, well,
right,
if I have this extender and I put it behind my TV, how am I going to get my remote control input to it? Because remote controls are infrared and they require line of sight or close to line of sight. With the Samsung device, the input goes into the TV and then the TV then relays the input to the extender. So the device doesn't even need to be in view.
Which is great because you've got your big TV mounted nicely, and you tend to not want extra boxes hanging around. You just want it to all be simple. And I guess you also mean you've only got one remote control as well.
That's correct. Samsung is shipping a remote control with their device that allows you to control the main TV functions like channel up, channel down, volume control, and so on, and also provides access to media center functionality. Notably including the green button, the start button for media.
Mm. So having that form factor then means it's essentially just an integrated unit. It just means that consumers then can decide whether they want to purchase the add-on, but it is just an integrated system.
Exactly.
And you mentioned about the control there, and there was a bit of so not necessarily confusion, but a lot of people were asking the question around CES was how can the remote control send the signals back down to the unit? And you mentioned going down HDMI. So how does that work?
HDMI has something that's called HDMI CEC, which, boiling down to really simply, is just a way of funneling command and control over the HDMI connection. So this is something that is not available on all HDMI connected devices, but is certainly available on some. So it can be used for everything from controlling a media center extender to controlling a DVD player, for example. So there are DVD players that are available. I have not seen any in the United States, but I know at least in Korea that are available, where you can control the DVD player using the TV remote control.
Right. So that solves a big problem then of having hundreds of remote controls or learning remote controls or whatever.
Right. The great thing in that case is there is no learning on the remote control. The remote control has buttons on it that do whatever functionality you need. You point it at the TV, you push the button, the TV feeds it down to the device, and in essence, magic happens.
Hmm. So that's really neat. So that means with one HDMI cable, the TV can control the extender, and you don't need a separate control cable or Ethernet cable or any kind of parallel cable or anything like that. It's just all simply dumped down the one cable.
You do need a separate power cable, and of course, if you want to do wired, then you would do Ethernet. But if you're running wireless, then you have power and you have HDMI, and that's it.
Yeah, that's a very neat solution.
Really, quite simple.
Mm. I mean, I suppose that that HDMI control protocol in the future will mean things like you've got an AV receiver that can do the selecting and have some intelligence there rather than just sort of dumb switching of ports. They actually talk to each other, so I think that's pretty good for the future. So that's a Samsung extender. So in terms of operation, they're actually. If you're using the Samsung extender, you're not going to actually see any difference whether I was using a Samsung one or a Linksys one. Am I right in thinking that?
You're correct. It's the extender functionality is going to be very similar from device to device because what enables what you see on screen is very similar from device to device. So there will be some differences in things like local device experience where using, as an example, the Samsung device and the D-Link device. The D-Link device includes functionality for connecting up to Windows Media Player network sharing to access content from non-Media Center PCs, whereas the Samsung device is solely a Media Center extender. And that's something that device manufacturers have the option of choosing what they want to include in terms of local functionality. So that is something that will vary from device to device, but the core Media Center experience will be very, very similar from device to device.
Right, I see, yeah. So using Media Center, you're going to find that familiar, but then the manufacturers can offer extended functionality and different connection outputs and all to differentiate the
exactly.
products. Which is a good way of doing it, because then you can choose which extender is best for you. I mean, certainly the form factors are different. I mean, talk about the D-Link, the unit. That's a totally different form factor from the Samsung device.
You're right. But physically, they're very different, where D-Link is designed to be something that fits nicely into a 19-inch wide stereo rack, be the same general form factor as other consumer electronics or stereo components. The Samsung device was engineered for being minimal in size because it's being fit to the back of the TV. And then if you look at the HP devices, they're, of course, a very different form factor because they are a TV.
I mean, that was an interesting product, I think, from a sort of a convergence point of view and from a simplicity. You get your family using the TV, having everything built into the one box makes it so much simpler than having to tell them, oh, okay, you need to go and switch the extender on and switch the receiver on and switch it to AV channel. It's all just there in the TV, and that certainly seems a great way forward.
It is, and one of the things that's really great about having it in the box of the TV is that as you start looking towards the future, if this is just a feature on the device, you don't need to think about what am I buying, do I have all the right technology or devices to plug together, and where am I going to put a secondary device? It's all just in one box.
And I think they've kind of married it with a nice-looking TV as well, so it's a great combination of a good-looking TV with the extended functionality, so you could... You know that you can connect that up to Vista.
Right.
And I suppose something like that I would imagine some people are getting that would get those models of TVs for the high-end TV features and the network-connected technology and be introduced to Media Center that way rather than sort of starting out with the PC side and then looking to add extenders.
One of the neat things that we have with Media Center extender technology in Windows Vista is that if you turn on a device on your network that has extender functionality, and you have a Windows Vista PC with Media Center, so Windows Vista Home Premium or Windows Vista Ultimate PC, you'll receive a notification on the PC that an extender was found. So, like you said, you could have a device where maybe you haven't used Media Center on the PC, and maybe you don't even know that the device is a Media Center extender, but when you have the two of them on the same network, the PC is going to tell you, hey, look, I found a device that can be used as a Media Center extender. Do you want to learn about how this thing works? And then by clicking on that little balloon, you can now learn about the extender functionality and get it set up and use it in your house.
Yeah, well, that's really neat and a good way of working. And you know, for anybody who's not seen an extender, when it connects up and you've got a bit of setup routine, I think I covered it on a video. Are there any difference between sort of the content that you see on the extender and the content that you'd see on your Media Center PC?
There can be differences depending upon how the device is set up. The Media Center extenders have a distinct user from the user on the PC. So you can think of it as, on the PC you might have a user for Ian and a user for Todd. And we might have different music libraries. When I set up a Media Center extender, I can select the option to copy my music library or copy my music library settings to that extender user so that I'll be looking at the same folders for music content, video content, and so on. Or I can also select not to copy that, in which case I could have a very, very different set of media on the device. Once the device is initially set up, then the content that will show up in the libraries, as long as the libraries are looking at the same, are set to look at the same folder locations, the content will be the same with a few caveats around time for content to populate as you copy new content in and so on.
So more or less, all your content, you can set it so that all your content is there and you're ready to go. I mean, I've set it up, it's sort of 10 minutes, something like that.
Right, and there's one way of really simplifying things, which is if you have your content located in your public music folder or your public videos folder, then that works transparently really easily, and you don't even need to think about, well, do I want to have this other folder over here that's got music, and do I want that to be on my extender or not? If you put it all in the public folders, then it will be available everywhere.
It works great for me. I can just pick up my media on the extender, and I've set up a few extenders now, and each time it always seems to get all my content there, so I've never really had to think about it or worry about it.
That's good.
Yeah, exactly. Now, just always get questions about the different formats supported, and I know when we talked a while ago, some of the format support comes down to the individual manufacturers. So you mentioned there's kind of a baseline. So what's the baseline support that the extenders, what content type, you know, out of the box will the extenders support?
On the video side, it's MPEG-1, MPEG-2, and Windows Media Video 9. On the audio side, it's Windows Media Audio Standard and Windows Media Audio Pro, along with MP3, of course. Couple of various flavors of MPEG audio. And then also all devices do support WMA lossless playback. Depending on the specific device, it may not support playback of DRM protected WMA lossless, which right now is pretty limited. I only am aware of one high-end audiophile music source that has that type of content. And then optionally, there are many, many, many formats that partners can add if they so choose. So a popular one that partners have been adding is MPEG 4 Part 2 support, and also MPEG 4 Part 10 support.
Right, so that was like DivX type
content
stuff.
Content that conforms to MPEG 4 Part 2 advanceable profile.
Right, okay. Because that's kind of, I don't have any of that kind of, that content. I know a lot of people like that, and you know, they want to see that on their extenders. And I think we haven't talked about the Xbox 360, but I know that that's one area that the extenders are different from the Xbox 360 extender, is those extra supports added by the manufacturers.
Right.
So the extenders will play those content types, and I guess then the things like connectivity, because you again going with the Xbox 360 is kind of a games console, and it's got the connectors that come with Xbox. We'll talk about the Xbox in a minute. But these devices have got more commonly found AV components connectors.
Right, and that's going to vary from device to device as well. So, for example, the Samsung device, as I mentioned, is an HDMI-only device that's designed for hooking up to selective Samsung TVs, versus the devices like the Linksys and the D-Link are more traditional set-top box or DMA-type standalone form factors that have many different device types that will allow you to connect up to many different types of TVs. So maybe if you have an older, maybe even standard definition TV sitting around, or you have a newer high-definition TV with HDMI, or maybe you have an older high-definition TV that has a component but doesn't have HDMI, that there are options out there to allow you to connect your device to whatever TV you have.
Now, I was quite impressed with the Linksys 2200. That's got quite a lot of different connections options on it, including sort of the digital audio output and different SCART connections and component video, as well as the HDMI.
Yes, they packed quite a bit onto the back of that little box.
Yeah, I mean, it is a nice little box. I mean, if anybody's not seen those, the what's the difference between the two Linksys products, the 2100 and the 2200?
The Linksys VMA2100 is a digital media adapter device that is only a digital media adapter. So it's a very small form factor. It's about maybe two-thirds the size of a hardcover book, give or take, and allows you to connect wirelessly or wired and get access to the Media Center experience. The VMA2200 is a device that also includes a DVD drive. So you could use that to either play DVDs or to use the Media Center functionality.
Yep, and which I think is a nice to have both options there. But so I like the 2200, but the 2100, I've seen some pictures, and we've got some on the blog of the 2100 mounted in a kitchen, sort of underneath a unit, because it's so small, it will fit. You can tuck it away, and it's quite good for that.
Right, it's really quite a compact unit.
Mm, absolutely, and it's still got a fair decent amount of connections on the back, which I was quite pleased about.
Yep.
So I mean, so those are the extenders, and the one extender that's been around the longest, or the version 2 extender that was probably we talked about last time on, was the Xbox 360. Now, probably most people are aware of its features, but just in case of note, what Media Center extender functionality does the Xbox 360 have?
The Xbox 360 has everything what we've been talking about already in terms of access to recorded in live TV, video content, music content, pictures, and so on. There are a few things that are a little bit different about the Xbox 360 versus standalone devices. One that most people will probably think of immediately is the Xbox is a little bit faster than your traditional consumer electronics device. So instead of having a few hundred megahertz embedded processor, it has three 2.2 gigahertz cores, each with two hardware threads. So as a result of having that additional power, the Xbox 360 does enable the option to have other functionalities that take advantage of that CPU. So, for example, being able to do a slightly richer Media Center experience than you can get on an embedded device. Also, the Xbox 360 has some additional media format support around Windows Media Video Image, which is what's used for PhotoStory videos. So having the motion slideshow type things that PhotoStory is able to generate.
But the transitions are an interesting thing, because when they kind of first saw the hardware extenders, you can see that it's not quite as smooth as the Xbox 360. But having lived with one for a few weeks, after the first couple of days of using it over the Xbox 360, you really don't notice the difference. And as soon as you start playing content, there's no difference at all.
You're right. One of the things that our beta feedback has shown in particular is a lot of people don't notice unless they're doing a side-by-side comparison. And that's really a testament to the work that we put into optimizing the animations and the transitions and making sure that we had a really good experience on those standalone devices.
Yeah, I mean, I really haven't, I don't really, I like the Xbox 360. And other people prefer hardware extenders because you don't have the fans, everything. But I think the Xbox 360 is a great extender, works for me. But I must admit, there wasn't really anything I missed when I was on the devices, apart from I wouldn't give up the game side of things. But, the hardware extenders do a very good job.
They do. I have a couple at home.
And I guess it gives you the choice, what form factor works best for you. I like having a games console and the extender functions in one unit, but maybe in the kids' room, I might just want to put I might not want an Xbox in there, so I could go with the extender, or certainly in the kitchen. I don't want to stick an Xbox 360 in there, but an extender would work well for that.
One of the really interesting things we've seen is that there are people that come down on sort of both sides of the game console or not game console question, where some people really, really love the fact that an Xbox 360 is both an extender and a game console.
Yeah.
And then there are some people who really, really love the fact that the standalone devices don't have the game console functionality built in. So it's really ultimately about choice, that there are multiple different options out there where if you want the Xbox 360 with the gaming functionality in addition to its standard functionality, you have that option. If you want something that doesn't have the gaming functionality, you also have that option.
Yeah, I mean, it's great having the options on there. And one thing we didn't mention as well, is the or we briefly mentioned was the wireless support. So do all the version 2 extenders have built-in network and wireless support?
Wireless functionality is something that is optional for extender manufacturers to offer with their devices. Now, that said, all the devices that are on the market right now are available for ordering right now do have wireless functionality available.
Yeah. And the ones that I've seen, the Linksys ones, have got the N configuration. Is that good enough for streaming HD content?
It is. In fact, 802.11a and G are both options for streaming high-def content. You get a better experience with A than you do with G, and you get a better experience with N than you do with A, at least on the 5 gigahertz band with N. Mm. So it's really a good, better, best, and with wired, bester, to make up a word, that we have tuned things so that you can get a good experience on 802.11g or on 802.11a, and then the more bandwidth you add, the better the experience gets. So the more quickly you're able to start playback of content, the more quickly you're able to seek through content or have fast-forward operations and so on, that we've made it so you can get a good experience without stepping up to N, but if you go up to N, you get an even better experience.
And I've done some testing, and occasionally I've had the network sort of congestion box that comes up, a little sort of thing in the corner saying there's a network issue, and you can run the network tuning performance function. What does that actually do? Does it actually achieve anything for sort of better playback?
The network performance tuner is something that we added the first version of back with the original version of Media Center Extender, and we've evolved it and improved it since then. And what it allows you to do is test your network with simulated media traffic and see how does it measure up. Are you able to get through the amount of content that you need in order to play standard definition content, in order to play high definition content? So the first thing it does is tell you whether you're good to go or maybe you might have some issues. So if you have enough bandwidth where HD is not going to be a problem, there's really nothing for you to do. If you fall in the range where you have enough bandwidth for standard definition playback, but you don't have enough bandwidth for high definition playback, then maybe you're okay if you're just watching standard definition content, or maybe you want to do some tweaks to your network. And so what it does is it offers up information related to some specific problems that we've encountered, whether that's you have an 802.11g network and there's an 802.11b device attached to that network, which is slowing it down, or maybe you're on an 802.11b network, which is really quite too slow for media content to play. Mm. Or you have two wireless hops, and so you effectively have half the bandwidth available on your wireless network. That there are some specific conditions we'll detect and tell you about. And then there's also some more general guidance around antenna placement and how to really get the best out of your wireless network.
And one tip that I think you mentioned when you were on previously is it's always best to have your actual media center PC hardwired to the network and then the extended devices coming wireless.
That's right. We've done a lot of work with our extender partners to really tune and ensure that they have high quality wireless solutions in their devices, so that if they're connecting to a certified for Windows Vista router, that we can give you a pretty good experience even across a couple of walls and some decent distance on wireless. So we've invested in making sure that we have tests in the Windows Logo program for getting certified for Windows Vista, so that you can have a good experience with wireless. That there's a lot of variability out there in the wireless landscape in terms of throughput and quality and reliability and so on.
Mm.
We've focused on making sure that we can give you a good experience.
I mean, that's one thing I did notice, that sort of the out-of-box experience for the devices is pretty good on sort of the Linksys ones that I've tested. And there are a couple of minor things, like there's a HDMI cable in the box would be good, and I had to go down to the store and get one of those. But and a couple of the outputs are not exactly as you want. But overall, I think the out-of-box experience is pretty good, that you can just connect these things up. Like you said, click on the little balloon up on Vista, and so 10 minutes later, you're up and running.
Right. It's really quite simple, that we have an 8-digit code that you type in, and as long as the device is connected to your TV and on your network, it's pretty automatic after you type that code into the PC, that it goes through the process of verifying that the device is the device that you're trying to connect, going through the steps of creating the user and populating the library and allowing the device to connect to the PC.
Yeah, it does work pretty good. Now, there is one more device that I wanted to ask you about, as I've talked about briefly on the show, and that was Nivius Media's extender, which is a little different from the others, and certainly in the price and in a different market. But could you tell us about that?
Sure. The Nivius Media extender is called the Edge, and it's something that's available through select custom AV installers. It's designed for the more the Cydia type market, the custom home installer type market, where it's a passively cooled device. It uses the Rainier chassis, if you're familiar with the media, the Nivius Media Media Center PC, that is essentially a giant block of aluminum with many, many, many cooling fans. So it's really quite an impressive device to look at and to hold. It's quite heavy from having so much metal. And it's as I mentioned, it's designed for the higher end AV installer market.
And it is a pretty expensive, but it's different because I think it's just got high end casing on it that does make it look stand out from the other devices.
It's really a different type of market in terms of the design and form factor of the device.
I know we can't talk about huge products or anything that's not been announced yet, but obviously this is kind of just the start of the V2 extenders. Do you think we're going to see more manufacturers looking at media center extenders and perhaps more differing form factors coming in the future?
We've been really excited about the response that we've gotten to media center extender technology from across the consumer electronics industry. So as you mentioned, I can't really talk to specific devices or companies. Generally speaking, though, yes, this is just the beginning. And you can even see that now with the announcement of Samsung at CES, that was a more late-breaking device in terms of starting with HP and D-Link and Linksys and now Samsung, that as time moves forward, we expect to see more devices. And because of the fact that there's so much flexibility in terms of how the manufacturers integrate the technology into which devices, we also will see different types of devices, form factor design, industrial design, and so on. So I'm really excited, looking forward to see what's coming next.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see kind of a more portable unit, perhaps a 15 or 17 inch, 21 inch LCD with the extender in, and perhaps a Blu-ray player with the extender technology built in. I guess these are things that are not impossible, and if the manufacturers thought there was a market for them.
Absolutely.
And if anybody wants to get more information about extenders, where's the best place to go?
A great place to start is www.microsoft.com/extender, and that will redirect to the Media Center Extender page on Microsoft.com. And I can go ahead and forward that link onto you so you can include it along with the show.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'll include it in the show notes, and listeners can go straight to that. Well, I think it's the extenders are finally here, which is great. I mean, we talked before and we knew they were coming, but it's great to see them finally here. And I've got one in my living room, which is even better. And it's great to see the technology. And it's also what I like about it is the choice of form factors. There's different types. And I know there's a few issues and around different content playback types and things, but I just got the feeling that we're getting there now, and these devices can only get better and only give us more options to get our content around the home.
I think so. I think the extender landscape is looking nice, and I think it's only going to get better.
Well, many thanks for your time today, for coming on the show to tell us about the extenders, and for your fourth appearance, we'll discuss these future things that you can't tell us about at the moment.
Well, thank you again for having me, Ian, and I look forward to talking in the future.
All right. Many thanks. Thanks to Todd. Please keep in touch. You can follow me on Twitter, isdixon. If you've got a Twitter account, let me know what it is. I'll definitely follow you. You can catch me in the chat room on live.digitallife.com fairly frequently, and keep an eye on the blog for when I'm going to be doing some live streams. That's the great thing about Twitter as well. As soon as I stick the live stream on, I put it on Twitter. So if you follow in Twitter, you'll know straight away. So I really like it for that kind of thing. Please go to the forums, have a look at that, get posted on there, and help out other people. Let's spread some of the knowledge.
Send in your emails for show 150, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Anything you want to send in, I just want to include you on the show. And I'll see you next week. See you around. Bye. Thank you.